Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hi everyone, this is Lauren Petrovic and welcome to another episode of Responsible Luxury. On this show, I sit down with the most extraordinary leaders behind driving responsible consumption and production in the luxury goods industry. We discuss things like market dynamics, product strategies, customer experiences, emerging technologies, and entry into Web3. The pressing need and increasing demand for systemic change to create a more sustainable and responsible industry is a consistent theme. My guest today, Shreyans Dholakia, is the brand custodian of his family business, Sri Ramakrishna Exports, fondly known as SRK in the industry. Renowned as one of the world's largest diamond cutters and exporters, SRK's journey is deeply rooted with a heritage of core values and tradition. I wanted to have this conversation with Shreyans because it sheds light on how a company deeply rooted in principles has successfully harmonized the economic, social, and environmental balance needed for sustainability. Shreyans has made numerous important contributions to the diamond industry, pioneering initiatives such as establishing an online diamond inventory in India back in 2010, a move that revolutionized the industry's digital landscape. As a testament to advancing the industry, SRK became the global leader in launching mobile e-commerce for diamonds. Shreyans' influence extends beyond the confines of the business realm, embodying SRK's commitment to being agents of positive change for their partners, people, and planet.
So stakeholders includes our people working with us. So we want to grow this family and create value for each of them. Now, value of life, value of money. Money is by associating, there can be any commercials involved, but that we want to increase, of course. But value of life is by how can we do some things, inspire them to live better life. It can be looking at our family values. It can be looking at our various core values that my father has always laid is about around, you know, respecting everyone. It's as simple as that. I am nothing, but I can do anything. But that does not mean that now you can't do anything in the world. You as a human have potential to do whatever you decide to.
In our conversation, we get deep into the weeds of what it means to take on a global family business and advance it to the next generation. The journey towards achieving net carbon zero, philanthropic endeavors like building temples in India, the power of being egoless, and the exciting future of the diamond industry. I learned a ton and realized the simple core values of life we often forget and how important it is to uphold these timeless values in this rapidly changing modern world. Without further ado, please enjoy a very wide-ranging, enlightening, and forward-thinking conversation with Shreyans Dholakia. Hello, Shreyans. How are you?
I'm very fine. How are you, Lauren?
I am good. I am genuinely really happy to have you on today, because I feel like it's a very unique opportunity to have someone such as yourself here sharing Pleasure. With the audience about your story, and especially all the wonderful things you're doing with SRK. And we want to hear everything that you're doing.
Thank you for having me here.
So tell me about SRK and how it started. So Sri Ramakrishna Exports also known as SRK, started with your father's long-term vision that continues to build 60 years later today. Can you tell us more about the early years of the business and its operations then?
Right. So in fact, today we are celebrating our 60th anniversary. It was 2nd April 1964. When my father, at the age of 14, he came to Surat, which is a city of diamonds, capital of diamond cutting and polishing all over the world. So he came to Surat in 1964. And before that, our all generations were farmers. So when he came to Surat, for 6 years, he did diamond cutting, polishing, he learned all that. And those days, there were only 200 diamond polishers in Surat with 300,000 total population of the city. Wow. Today, that city has grown to 8 million population and with 1 million in diamond business. So that expanded city we have. And at that time, when my father was learning, the biggest or the highly crucial skill was bruting the stone. So it's like the shaping of the stones. And that's how we started in 1964. 6 years later, in 1970, is when actually he started the company with two of his other friends. And when they started the company, he only had 500 rupees in his pocket. And he had to borrow 450 from one of his partner's wife. So almost sold the jewelry, and whatever cash was left in the house, that was taken away. And that's how the first rough parcel was bought at the 950 rupees. And that's how the company began in 1970, 12th of March. And since that day, it has never been looking back. For 25 years, they continued the partnership with three friends and grown from almost nothing with just three of them and four other workers, all mostly relatives. When they separated in 1995, there were about 1,000 people we had at that time. And they split because all the three families were growing big. So they formed into three separate companies, and my father retained the brand Sri Ramakrishna Export. So if I go back again, why did they name Sri Ramakrishna Export? It has reference to it as well, because in his those 6 years of training or, you know, learning period, he used to attend one of the discourse of our religious thing. And in that, the saint said that keep God's share in whatever you do and start everything with God's name. So that is why Ram and Krishna are two lords. Krishna for his action of everything right, but he has ways to do various things. Ram has a character of everything, truthfulness, straightforward, and obeying to parents and, you know, things that are the familiar values. And Shri stands for Lady God, mostly references to the Lord for money or prosperity in that term. So while doing everything, we wanted prosperity. So we kept Shri, Ram and Krishna all together and added export because we wanted, they were not doing export, but we wanted to get into the export business. So that was a fancy thing then. Mm-hmm. And that's how the name was formed. After starting the company, 7 years later in 1977 is when my father first traveled to Antwerp to buy rough, Antwerp, Belgium. And he was literally fond because while starting business in Surat, he got a lot of support from the community, got a lot of support from other diamond friends, but that they were still all known people or from the community people. But when he traveled to Belgium, that's when he realized that the entire trade is very much familiar. Everybody was welcoming. And like if we say in other industries, there are entry barriers. Here, there was no entry barrier. People welcomed him and took him to many places where he can buy rough and, you know, things. So this was otherwise any newcomer is very difficult for them. But for him, it was not that difficult. And he found his place to buy rough and then the relationship developed. So that's how the supporting elements we kept on getting through the journey. And one of the three partners died in 1983 out of cancer. And the other two then thought that because the person who died, his kids were about 18 and 15 then. So they said, we will continue the share as it is until his kids turn enough big to run a business. So that's how in 1995, when they separated, their elder son was 25, younger was 22. So they both were able to take the business forward. Mm-hmm. And they had given proper training. And that's when they got separated in 1995. And after getting separated, familiar company was established. So from our side, my uncle and all were running a separate company. So we merged both the companies. And then SRK became a family company. And so almost the new structure, the company remains the same. Values remain the same. My father was the same, much better. But the new structure that formed in the company is already now 29 years old.
Wow.
Yes.
And so there's a lot packed in there. One of the things I want to touch on later today is the spirituality and the religious perspective that always comes into business, especially in India. And I definitely don't want to forget about that. So once you were old enough and you had, or I guess suppose when you were younger, did you always know you wanted to be a part of the business? Did you ever think you were going to be doing anything else?
No, never that thought came into mind, because since my birth, I was like born with a diamond spoon, I would say. I usually say that.
Yes.
Because father had got the fame. The company was established already with a good name in the industry. So I've always been in that world of diamonds. And he used to take me to office regularly. So I've seen that operations. So there was never a second thought or a plan B that I wanted to do. It was always join the family business. And very early in my life, I learned that whatever my father was doing, he was doing a lot at that time. And somehow we talk about purpose of life today, but at that tender age of 16, when we really don't know about much of life, where are we headed, I somehow formed my purpose of life, that whatever my father has done, I want to do the same thing.
Yes.
And I want to continue that, try to grow. I'm saying try to grow because I had to shoulder a lot of responsibilities. So even if I maintain whatever he has done, I would have taken it as a blessing. Growing is a cake, cherry on the cake kind of a stuff. So
yeah,
that is how, I mean, there was no second thought to it.
And moving the business forward, the family business forward, is, I'm sure, is not an easy task. Of course, it's already established, but that doesn't mean that the tradition, moving the business from where it was to where it's going, is not simple. It's almost like, you know, it's restarting. It's almost like restarting like a new era of the business. So you yourself have a long-term vision for the brand and, you know, shaping the brand's identity for SRK is very integral to what you're doing now. What do you recognize and how do you recognize the opportunity to bring SRK into the next generation?
Right. So usually people have that belief. And when I was growing up, many people told me that your father has laid a nice runway for you. Aircraft is ready to take off. And some also said that the aircraft is already there and it's about to take off. It's already taking off. And you are getting this opportunity to just be on the flight, you know. Yeah. But now I realize, that time I was like, oh, wow, it's going to be a very easy thing to be on the family business. But now if I look back, my thing, I mean, to explain the same story, continuing, what if somebody's handing over flying of the plane mid-air, now you continue flying, you know, how would that be? And that too, without any knowledge of pilot, any knowledge of about the aircraft. Yeah. It is like a similar situation. So, of course, we are given 2 years of, or time is not a bound. So we are, ground up training is given to us when we enter the business. And it's like we have to go through every stages of business from rough to polish. And then where the business needs of a placement happens within the company. So it is not that identifying a gap or an opportunity was something that we were looking for. But because it is a growing company, my father started and it was too unorganized company then as a second generation, my elder cousins joined the business. So that's when they entered in 1995 and the company got into a new structure. So that's when my elder brothers joined. And I joined very later in 2009 and 10 around period. So that's also 15 years later than them. So they had somewhat structured the company well. But when we entered, it was still growing. The time was still enhancing and new opportunities around digital was coming in. So company was very innovative. It was accepting a lot of technology in the diamond crafting field. But sales side was still the basic regular thing.
And which I was always, what was sales like online before? It wasn't online in 2010.
It was not online. So it is all traditional sales.
Right.
And I was very fond of marketing and branding. Where I studied in India, that taught me from IT networkings to IT structures to websites and everything. It taught me e-commerce in a whole package. So I brought all that to the company and said, can we go online with whatever we have? So we started to build. I was literally sitting in the IT room trying to code because we only had 3 coders. So I was literally finding online how to code, how to make apps. So all those things, background work I have done regarding website development, we used to meet people. And we developed our first website in 2008. And that's when our e-commerce journey started. So when we started, we didn't know what we wanted to do. And we thought we'd just have a website, start to sell something and see where do we go forward with this. Maybe we can cover 10%, 15% with the online sales. And when we launched in August 2008, if you remember rightly, October, November is when in 2008 the recession started.
Right.
And people started to avoid traveling around the world. Cost cutting was the period. And we were just rightly placed, luckily, in that area where we had the e-commerce ready. And people slowly started to trust our system. I mean, there was nothing much compared to today what we have. But they, whatever we had information, they were trusting it. And that's how customers were jumped onto our e-commerce. And in the first year, by 2009, we were already doing 35% business online. So that gave us a lot of motivation internally. And then after that, we never discussed costing on e-commerce. So whatever new thoughts came, entire management, entire family has given me free hand to try new things, to implement new things. And that's why our website has always been a step forward to the industry.
Yes. Certainly, you know, times of global chaos, there's always those seeds of opportunity there.
Exactly.
And that's definitely what you guys did.
So that's one of my father's teachings as well, that problem is progress. So he explains that whenever you have a problem and that's when you find a solution, you implement that solution, walk behind it, and that's when you get success and really progress.
That is a very good principle to live by. Problems are progress, certainly.
Yeah.
SRK is involved in a lot of community engagement. Can you tell us more about SRK, its core principles, and also its mission?
Right. So mission is nothing but generally we want to create a large family of stakeholders. So stakeholders includes our people working with us, our customers, our suppliers, like bankers, whoever are associated, you are also part of our group's stakeholder now that you know us.
Yes.
So we want to grow this family and create value for each of them. Now, value of life, value of money. Money is by associating, there can be any commercials involved in all this different stakeholders, but that we want to increase, of course. But value of life is by how can we do some things, inspire them to live better life. It can be looking at our family values. It can be looking at our various core values that my father has always laid is about around, you know, respecting everyone. It's as simple as that. Transparency is one, honesty, family culture. So all these are very basic things, but we forget. Looking at the modern world and, you know, trying to show that we are much advance and better, we forget our roots. And actually, everything lies in the roots. That's what we believe.
And something that I'm sure you've noted this as well, because you grew up in the business. I believe that the diamond and jewelry industry is one where those old school values have always been held, because family businesses take up a big portion of the industry. So those timeless values that have been living on for generations have been upholding the industry. And perhaps people outside of the industry may not see these narratives in play, where the business really is run by trust and transparency, and these values of these lifelong relationships that are built and cultivated over decades. And there's something to be spoken about that. I think that the diamond jewelry business has been run very similarly how it's been run for hundreds of years. At the end of the day, it's two people, two companies, a handshake and a deal and trust between two people. Yeah, muzzle. Exactly. And, I'm very fascinated by the people that are behind that, the industry. So I want to ask you more about the foundation of SRK. Recently, I saw you guys marked a significant milestone with the foundation by celebrating, I might butcher their name, please correct me if I'm wrong, but the Pran Pratishtha of the seven temples in the district of Gujarat.
I'll tell you on that. So
yes.
So while the company was growing, as I mentioned to you, my father in 70s, during every evening, 1 hour, he used to go to a group of people who are only discussing spirituality on the basis of Bhagavad Gita, which is a holy book that we have in Hinduism. It talks about conversation between Lord Krishna and Arjun. So in that, even that book is today also relevant. You can page any book and it has power to answer your problems of today. So that book is written almost, time can be anything, 5,000 years or, we say 6,000 years. So it was all, the discussions were all about that every day, 1 hour. So when my father went there, he learned about giving back. And he had that urge that I want to give back on the person who was leading the meeting. And that person said that it's good that you want to give back, but before giving anything to me directly, make sure everything around you is perfect. Now, there can be many meanings to this one statement. And that also, he did not waste a paper. He used the same paper which my father had given him. On the reverse side, he mentioned this. So sustainability was even playing a role in those days. So my father interpreted that I have to take care of people around me. I have to take care of my family. And then comes the city. And then comes geographically, we keep growing the boundaries, right? So that's how my father interpreted. And we started, after one of my father's part died of cancer, he was very fond of girls in general, the girl child. And those days, about 80s and 90s, education to girls in India was still a distant thought. People don't used to send girls to school. They used to thought girls are the burden on the family. So, my father and the foundation first started with a school in 1990, and that was only for girls' education. So, only girls used to go there. And it was started with a motive of charity. Those who can pay the fees used to pay, but those who cannot pay the fees, the foundation used to sponsor it. It ran as a girls' school for a certain period. And then, because it was a local medium, and if you wanted to convert it into English medium, we had to go for co-education. So now it's a co-ed school, but school is still there. In the same premise, he had a good friend in architect, interior and architect designing, which suggested him that because you have a noble thought of doing something like this in school, how sustainable would you over the period of many years? So I would make a school where it starts from third floor onwards. Bottom, I'll give you a small mall kind of a stuff, which you can sell as a stores to various people. Those income can be used to run your school. So the layout was formed in that manner. But over a period, we never converted into malls because various of our foundation activities took place in that bottom two floors. And so that's how the school started. And then in below, we had a AIDS Research Foundation in association with our government. There is a small medical, first we do medical checkups, and there is x-ray and sonography and blood, you know, blood sampling facility. It's very basic. But all common people can just be there at a hardly any fee. We're not even taking money off papers, I mean, today in that response, if you see. And they can make their files. And what we did, I have with Surat's best doctors, because every doctor also want to give service to the community, but they have no means to do it. So we provided them this platform where they can come and do the service. So all this was specialty, MD doctors, super specialist. They used to come here weekly once, 1 hour, and used to see the patients at our center, and the entire facility and everything was managed by us. So this is how we could able to match the best doctors with the person in need, kind of, you know, stuff. And in this between, everything was working normal. But if some patients need extra care or an operation, which was serious operation, then that doctor used to speak to my father. And then we used to do all other stuff related to heavy operations or anything else. Side, there was another room which was running as a relief center. So the name is very different, relief center, but it was actually relieving people from all sorts of their problems, be it financial, education, or familiar issues. So many used to think, or take my father as a fatherly figure, and they used to come to our house any time of the day. So my father decided that I'll start one small room here and give people a time that every day morning I will be available in this room. You can come and discuss all your problems, but don't come to my house because that's my family time. So he dedicated that 1 hour of the day, and this is 35 years ago. Since that day, he's doing this. And in that room, so he sits there, any person can come, that husband and wife issues, my brother's issues, familiar issues, I mean, daughter is not listening, son is not listening, all sorts of issues, including students having education problems, some health issues, I mean, financial aid related to health. So all these things were sorted. So I think until now, in this many years, more than 3 million people have been met directly with my father. And we have database of everyone today. That is something, I mean, he did. And we never spoke about such activities because, I mean, in terms of giving money, total money given until now would be about 5 million altogether. So if we consider all other activities that we do, 5 million is not that great, because if we divide all other activities, but the time and personal touch that people got with this, I mean, there have been innumerable lives that have been saved by this activity. So if I give you an example, if a student comes there, how do we judge a student that he is in dire need of money? So whatever religion he be, mostly they were Hindus. So we used to give him the Bhagavad Gita that I mentioned to you about, because that has changed my father's life. So the same book was given to the students, and there are 18 chapters to it, more than 700 slokas. So we used to ask the student, if you need money, one chapter will give you 1,000 or whatever equivalent in those times. So whatever is the need, I mean, they used to come back in 2 days, 3 days. And those who completed all 18 chapters, we used to adopt him for life in terms of education. We have such 22,000 students who have been adopted. So, and they also return in kind. I mean, we tell them this is not a charity that we are doing. If we do charity, it will come on your head, and you know, you might take it in different manner. But we will write it only as a loan. So you always know that it is not, everything is not free in life. That was the first lesson that they learned, that this was a loan, but loan at 0%. So if you in life make money ever, then you try to repay. And we, from our side, we know money is not going to come. So we consider it as charity. But to them, we tell them it's a loan. So like I tell you a story, a person came to us actually. He applied for a job. He came as a CA. and told my father that my life I want to dedicate to you, because during my education time, you had been paid for my education. My father had forgotten him, and he was like, he's just playing around. We tested him for 3 years, and for those 3 years, we gave him no work. He stayed with us in the school as a CA. He's well educated. And after 5 years of spending life like that, we tested him, and now he's part of the main SRK's finance team.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So we get such dedicated people out of it.
You know, I think SRK is one of the best examples to give about sustainability, right? Because it's, like you said, it's starting back in the 70s when your father met with the leader of that group, where he says, before you help other people, you need to help yourself, or something along those lines. Look around, and it's, you know, it starts first with the household and then your local community, and then it starts to just go broader and broader and bigger from there. And of course, you know, businesses, you have to think about capital, but it's also the impact you have with, again, all the stakeholders that come in and interact with SRK. That interaction somehow impacts and elevates their life in a very positive way.
I truly believe in this. Whatever we are giving, coming is echoing back to us. It's good deeds come back to us. And what we consider is, we have, because how can we do this charity? It is because that person has told us to keep God's share, right? Yeah. And my father has kept God's share in our company as well. So what is God's share? Now, if God is really there, if we consider in that sense, and if he really wants, what would he do with his money? Help people, right? So this is all money that we have kept as his share is going for the service. Now, if he want us to do more charity, he would definitely increase our company and the size of our profit. And so his share will increase. And so we can do more.
I would hope these principles transfer over to other Western cultures, because especially just thinking about the philosophy of business, I admire the values and the principles you live by and want to grow the business, because that is how things have long-term impact and long-term value. And, you know,
I tell you, it's not just SRK. I mean, the entire community of Indian, at least Indian diamond business, is all run by such values. And everybody has a share of God in their company. Everybody does literal charity work. Mostly it is health and education related. And I tell you, I mean, we are just not good at marketing it. So our Indian government came up with a policy of 2% compulsory CSR norm that we have to take out from our net profits. But I think there are many companies in diamond trade for definitely where they would be going beyond 2%, because we don't look at this activities as just mere policy driven. It's more self-driven.
Yeah.
And that's why we don't look at those numbers. Because we don't have just 2% share in our profits for that area. It is more than 2%.
Yeah. I mean, the incredible amount of resources outside. My big thesis is, I believe that our industry can be an engine for that social and economic growth if used properly. So widespread, thinking more of the global industry, you know, I hope that more emerging businesses and startups take these values and take these perspectives and take that and run, you know, with their business into the future, because that's how we're going to build a more sustainable industry.
Yeah, we were touching on that latest milestone. So apart from these activities, of course, so when he was doing all this, my father, and he met such people regularly who needs and things. So one of the saint from the organization of that we follow as a religion, he got separated from that institution, and he took blessings of his leader. And leader said that you are doing good. In order to do service of people, you must go to a tribal area and devote your life there. So that saint, his name is P.P. Swami, he went to Dang area, which is a tribal area of our Gujarat state, which spreads from Gujarat to across Maharashtra. And in that area today, about 230,000 people are living There are about 311 villages in that area, the whole one region. And in that area, he goes there, paddle everything, and he roams around because those people are not friendly with, they consider us as outsiders. So it is, we have to gain that confidence, trust, and then begin our activities. Otherwise, you can't do that. So he first gained that confidence. He set up there. He said, I want to have a school where your kids can go and get education, because these people are always staying within them, working in the field with little money, drinking, and then ending their life by 40. That was their life expectancy, nothing more than 45.
Wow.
So you can imagine, I mean, being in the same, it's just 100 kilometers from Surat. So it's not that far also. And he went there, we started with the school, I think that's about 20, 25 years ago. So that school is run by my grandmother's name. So my father and all became the main founder trustees in that school. And not just us, but there are a few others as well from Surat. But the name was taken by us. So 500 students are studying, I mean, every year in that school, the capacity of, it's a residential school. And the success story is today we have many engineers out of it, many doctors out of it. And the biggest success we got 3 years back, where if you have heard of elite school in India of engineering, is Indian Institute of Technology, Delhi. There are many Indian Institute of Technology across Mumbai, Delhi, and 5-6 more. But Bombay and Delhi one are the toughest to get in. I mean, there are 200-300 people apply, 200-300,000 people apply, and only maybe 1,000 get into it. So it's that ratio.
Wow.
And in that
0.001%.
So from this tribal area, one student got entrance to that institute. So that is a real success for us, that which we could translate. So while we were having this relationship with Swamiji, and we knew the area, my father used to go a lot of time to in this school and understand the area. So we said these people lack a lot of, why 40, 45 years of life expectancy is because they lack basic healthcare activities. I mean, around there, and education, and, you know, things like that. So every year since last 28 or 29 years is what we do, medical camps in that area. Because I told you, we have that medical center in our school premise. So with that network of doctors, we tell each doctors to spare one day with us, one of the weekends. And we take them, about 300 doctors, to this tribal area. We organize a full medical camp in 3 different villages at one time. On Sunday, the whole medical camp happens. We see 1,000, 1,500 or 2,000 patients. Basic treatments are all given to them. Free medicines are distributed, whatever is needed. And if we found serious cases, we then convince, because we cannot ask them to come to Surat. We have to convince them that going to Surat is, I mean, we'll take care of you. I mean, everything, I mean, it's just convincing of everything. Then we bring them to Surat and do the further medical checkups. And if operation or anything is needed, then we take care of it as well. So these activities are also happening for 28 years. And so they got this confidence now also on us as well, not just that one saint, but also as a company or my father. Now they see, attach themselves with. And because we go there every year with this medical camp, just I think 6 years back is when that saint and my father were in the car going from one village to another. So when we go, we also distribute a lot of daily needs, just distributing them. And we all go, like, so I also been going there for 20 years. I just, as a child, I used to go there, and we also see this world. And today, even my son at 10 years of age, even he comes with me to distribute these things. Yes. We don't have to stand in the medical camps, but that time on that Sunday, we used to distribute stuff to around villages. So when they were going in the car, one of the Lord we have is Hanumanji, who was a good service to Ram Lord. So he was just, his ideal was just lying on the road under one tree. So my father asked that, why is this situation of Lord? And that Swamiji explained that this is, what can we do and who will do it? So my father was like, we will do it. Let's do something for them. So then the Swamiji was like, it's not just one. It's every village in this area, a similar story. So then my father was like, okay, we'll do it for every village. So that's, this was just a communication of few seconds, like 60, 90 seconds, and everything was over. So since then, the determination came that we would be building, there are 311 villages, so 311 temples in all the areas where these people get a place to worship. Otherwise, where would they go? That's the problem. If our gods are lying on the road, what about the followers of that religion? They don't have place to worship. Yeah. So we started to build temples. And what my father realized that if I will build 311 temples, however spiritually strong I am, at day one, day two, or day three, I will not have ego of it. I can spend my whole life without an ego that I built the temples. But what about my next generation? They would definitely have some egos that our family has built. We have built the temples. Yeah. And we are big and stuff like that. So he said, we will do everything, but we will spend half money. Half money will be spent by any random donors who wants to donate money. They will have to do nothing. We will do everything and we will take their half money and we will put their name on the temple. So our name will not be there on the temple. We will only do the work. We will build the temple, but name would be someone else's name at half the cost of the project. So that is how we are building. And until now, the 7 latest temples which were inaugurated, or Pran Prati, inauguration is for office and home buildings. Pran Pratishta means filling the ideals with life. So we do spiritual things to call real life into those murtis or ideals. So that is called Pran Pratishta. And the recent 7 now totals to 60 total temples already done and devoted to those villages. And by this year and more, 40 will be done. So 100 will only be achieved of the 311 total target that we have.
Wow. And 311 temples is the big initiative to tackle. And yeah. I mean, the fact that you guys are already going after that, and most significantly too, it's like thinking about how to take ego out of it, coming in and involving these donors. And I think it's it's remarkable.
Believes that he always told us, the entire company knows about this now, is that he always follows a mantra, I am nothing, but I can do anything. So he says that I am nothing means we should be egoless. Whatever we know, like even he says that even at spending 60 years in diamond industry, if I say that I know everything about diamond, that ego is also wrong. So we should not have any ego, because even today I don't know how to sell online. That you guys know, I don't know. There'll be something that we don't know. So why do we have that ego? And plus, even if we know everything about that subject, it is only one subject that we know of. I mean, if you look around the room, there is light, there is this table, there is phone, there is camera, water bottles, pen, visiting cards. All things around us, we can't do anything. We can't make any of them. We can only make diamond. So we only know one of the thousands of things around us. So why do we have that ego? So that means I am nothing. But that does not mean that now you can't do anything in the world. You as a human have potential to do whatever you decide to do. So you have that potential. So that's energy that he's talking about. One is being egoless, and second is about the endless energy that God has given us.
Yes. That really excites me, because thinking about human potential with anything, right. Because I just want to highlight that again about what you said. It's the mantra that your father says, I am nothing, but I can do everything, gives you that determination to go and run with any idea that believe in.
Anything. Spend 1,000 hours and 1,000 days and you're mastering that subject.
Yes. So I want to quickly touch on supply chain, where SRK sits. So you guys buy rough and produce and manufacture polished diamonds.
Exactly.
And from there, export to buyers.
So, diamond industry, I mean, the whole supply chain, if you understand, there is a group of miners. Mostly the mines are owned by the country itself, and they are being licensed to various companies like De Beers, and mostly it's a country-owned mine operators like Alroza in Russia's case. Alroza was a country-owned company to have a license to mine in Russia itself. So, but De Beers is an independent company. Rio Tinto is one. Anglo America is one. They're all companies who get licenses to mine in various parts of the world, the different countries. So diamond mining today happens mostly in southern part of Africa, which is South Africa, Botswana, Namibia, all those countries, Zimbabwe and around. And northern, northwestern most part of Canada. So that's called Northwestern Territories. And yes. East Northern Territory of Russia. So, I mean, two parts of the world and southern part of Africa. These are the largest chunk of where rough diamond comes from. There was a mine in Australia which just got closed 2 years back. So India also had mines 50, 70, 100 years ago. But today there's no mines in India. So these are the only countries where mining happens. And from all these mines, there are various companies who either directly sells to diamond crafters, as we call them, or so like from De Beers sells to roughly about 60 or 70 site holders that they have, or today maybe all site holders included 100 site holders they have. So they sell to direct companies like us 700, but from this 100 also there'll be many players who would be then again reselling them to the real diamond crafters in India. So that's a whole supply chain. It's rough traders is what we call them in between. Mostly these traders are in Antwerp, in Belgium, and in Dubai now. Mm-hmm. Dubai is also a new center which is coming up. From there, most of these stones come to India. If you go back 7-8 years, I think world's 90 to 95% was happening in India. But now with beneficiation into countries, like beneficiation programs in Botswana and Namibia and elsewhere, some part of production is shifting to those countries, but still significant of diamond crafting from rough to polish is what we call cutting and polishing happens in India. And in India is also, it is centered around one city, which is Surat. So whatever happens in India, about 80% would be happening in Surat. 20% is elsewhere in the region of Gujarat. So one state covers everything.
Okay.
About 1 million people involved in diamond cutting and polishing in India. And after we cut and polish, so there is few trading hubs within Surat. Mumbai is one of the larger trading hubs where all polished diamonds of India comes. And from here, again, it goes to trading centers like Dubai, Hong Kong. Antwerp is also one. New York is one. Israel, Tel Aviv. So these are 5-6 hubs where this polished diamond goes, and from there it goes to the real jewelry manufacturers or jewelry retail brands, and that's how then further supply chain goes to the end stores, which are retailers, independent stores, big chains, and then to the counters, and then to the consumers.
And then to the end consumer. So thinking about how things are changing right now, do you have your eyes set on any traceability initiatives within SRK, within certifying, for example, somehow digitizing where you source your diamonds and then passing that along the chain of custody to the next customer?
So I think traceability was always playing an important role, and people were asking questions around traceability in 2017-18 when they started asking questions. That time around, blockchain was also a technology which was coming into industry. But in 2018, when we sat down, we did not really have our eyes on the blockchain as a technology. We did not saw acceptance of that technology. So we said, what can we do today? We said, we have everything ready. We have an in-house ERP where we track each and everything. So from one rough stone, even if you buy 100 rough stones together in one bulk, we still separate them, give them individual numbers, and then further put it into production, crafting. Maybe we cut 4 stones out of one rough. Still everybody gets a parent and a child name, and we carry forward that legacy into the system, and we know who has cut the stone. Everything is tracked in internal system. So we said, how can, this was our internal system. When we go to customer and say, I know everything about the diamond, and then when the trust factor comes and he would like, okay, do I have to trust your internal system? So we said, people cannot trust our internal system directly. So we got it certified by a third party, which is British Standard Institute, and they had come up with a new supply chain integrity certificate, PAS 7000. So it was a worldwide certification, and when we did it in 2019, we got audited, and the first time the certificates were received to us, we in-house developed just the program tracing the diamond from rough purchases to the polished sales. And we named it Footprints. And the entire Footprints program was certified by this British Standard Institute. And when we got certificate, we were the 22nd company globally across the industries. First in diamond and jewelry sector globally. So, and they do it every 2 years of audit. So, I mean, our third audit is already done in that. So when we realized that we do this one certificate was really hard one, because of course cost was included in multiple audits, and they audit all our premises and not just one part, because usually you have seen ISO 9000 for, you know, quality. There is a energy, another certification for energy management, another for occupational health, another for IT. So totally six ISOs combined forms this one certificate.
The Footprint certificate?
Yeah. Footprint is our in-house name, but Footprints got certified with a PAS 7000 certificate. So that one PAS 7000 consists of all these audits.
Okay.
So it goes through child labor, I mean, all aspect of ESG, everything was covered in this.
And where SRK is, you know, passing that along to the polished traders once it gets to the hubs, do you see a lot of your customers demanding these certificates?
So initially they were. I mean, what we thought, that free information is also not good, because while we are doing so much effort at our end to keep that integrity, right? We started to, and we know that who in 2019, it was not need of the hour. We were early adopters in that. So we said that we will charge a premium those who want it. So only serious buyers would approach us. And those serious buyers, we knew that they were selling to the brands, European brands. And they were getting any which ways much more premium than just normal traders. So it was all a sustainable, viable business model. But since post-COVID, things changed. And meantime, a lot of lab-grown activities started to happen. And to balance that, people started to question about the origin of the stone. And that's when everybody across the board was just looking for origins of the stone. And then, you know, the war happened. And, you know, so things completely changed. So today, we still charge that, I mean, 1% premium for information. But now information on our website is everybody can access. Those who have access to our website can have access to the origin. But if you want to mention it on the invoice, and when we mention it on the invoice, we guarantee that if there would be question arising in the future, we are ready to present all the documents to our customers.
Yeah.
And now with the G7 regulations, the basic declaration is fixed from every supplier, right? So we have to any which ways put that declaration that this is coming from this kind of source and everything. So, yeah, now it's a mandatory thing for every supplier to keep track of all this.
And when you look at the data inside the footprint certificates, you have the rough origin and you have any parent data within it?
No, so we don't. We only give country of mining.
Okay.
Yeah. We know everything. So we have a footprints and a footprints plus. Plus is because few customers want other services around origin. So this was our service enabler thing, where we give customers a proper video of diamond being cut from rough to polish, various journeys we are tracking. And in that, we used to give more information to our customers, those who wanted. It was like
I think more and more for the younger generation up and coming in the industry, I think that's going to be more of a demand. coming from the consumer and then rising upwards. So I think I'm very excited about more of the traceability initiatives. And again, I think a lot of what's happening with the Russian sanctions is, like you said before, problems are progress. And this is going to be really healthy, I think, for the industry.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Today we are in that phase of crazy waves. Once it settles down, we'll be in a better position. Because if you look at, if you go and buy LV bags or Hermes bag, right?
Yeah.
You don't question them from where it comes. Or whether it's, harsh. But what we consider is underlying that when we are buying from a brand like LVMH or Hermes, we take it as underlying that they will be taking care of all these things, right? All social elements. They will not be ill-treating the animals. So all that, you already believe in that story, even though they don't say it. So similarly for us, I think the branding element was always missing. And that's where, and in our industry, if you look at, there are multiple players at every angle. Only mining side, there are limited players. But in mid-sector where diamond crafting happens, there are thousands of players. And if you go to retail side, there are even more number of thousands, hundreds of thousands of players across the world. So nobody really cared of creating that brand value. Now, if you take Tiffany as a name, Tiffany is doing this since 2013, 14, I think, of telling the origin. Now, what is that real story? People believe in Tiffany is because they think Tiffany is not just diamond. They're taking care of a lot more than just that product. But how many Tiffany's do we have in the world? And look at the retail numbers. Huh? New diamond industry that we see is all around branding, advertising, creating that brand itself, which can compete with LVMH and Hermes and those substitute products.
On the traceability measures, has SRK faced any major challenges with implementing these certificate programs like footprint, or was it just intuitive? You guys were pretty much already doing it, you just paired it with the technology.
So I think we were step by step doing it. So, it was not one day difficult to us. It was like we were taking a little pain every day. So we really did not feel that bigger pain. But if today you have to do that everything, it's a bigger pain, I would say. It's not a small thing to do for any new company, especially after the mandatory government regulations. It is cost, a bigger cost element, time element, a lot of paperwork. So it's not an easy thing to do. Definitely.
It's not easy, but it's definitely necessary to move your business forward.
Necessary, yes. And technological investment is also needed.
Yes. SRK has a goal to achieve net carbon zero by 2024. Can you tell us more about this initiative and perhaps some eco-sustainability initiatives going on?
As I said, that my family, my father and previous generations were into farming. So we always worked on the land, and we know the meaning of being environmentally sustainable and what does it mean for the value of soil, the value of rainwater, for the value of various seasons in India, right? If this goes a little haywire, my father came to Surat to earn that extra money at the age of 14. If you combine all these packets, there was a need of real money. There was no money to run the house. Why this happened is because one of the season of rain might have got disturbed. And so our crop did not grow. And so we did not have enough money in the house. And he being that youngest one, not engaged in farming fully. So he was sent to Surat at the age of 14 to make that extra money. Now, all this learning combined today make that sense for us where we value whatever is given as a mother nature, mother earth to us. Before even ask that we are working towards sustainability is on this thought-provoking ideas. All this culture that has been passed from my father and the family to the next generation. Otherwise, it is, again, the activities that we do around sustainability is, again, time and cost both. I included a lot in that. And on the other side, when I go to sell a diamond and say that this is coming from a LEED Platinum, world's fifth most green building in the world. People don't care to pay any cent extra on that diamond. Diamond is still the diamond, right? Then why do I pay so much cost to make that happen? It's just because, again, it's out of the heart that we are doing it.
Right.
So journey started in 2013, 14 is when, I mean, we have made a new factory in 2011. The architect was really good, our Suraj architect, and he was fond of this global warming perspective. And he designed the building in a way where more natural light would be flowing into the overall building. India and Surat is a heat sensitive region. So how can we avoid the heat directly passing on to the building so that we use less of the air condition? Using less of the air condition, that time the thought was to reduce the electricity bill, but also to keep the building more cooler, right? So it was balancing in all the elements. He showed us the cost element, but later, 2 years down the line, we realized that this is ultimately everything is helping the nature in a way. So we applied for the United States Green Building Council LEED certification, and we got silver out of it in 2014, I guess, 14 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
And so we then started to work, how can we make it better, better, better? In 2019 is when we got two of our crafting units, both LEED Platinum certified. And again, this United States Green Building Council has a platform online which has a database of 150,000 buildings in that. It's worldwide, all the buildings that they have certified as their database, they keep monitoring on a daily basis of their electricity, traffic and wastage, all the movements.
And this is, anyone can access this. Anyone can access on the website.
The website is known as koru. I will let you know the link.
Yeah.
So anybody can just go there. Yeah, you can just go there on the link and check worldwide buildings. Now in that, since last 2 years, constantly, both of our diamond crafting unit has been coming top five, top six in green building ranking. And imagine we are competing with the buildings like Pentagon, Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty. So those are visitor centric and ours is a factory. I mean, combination of those two.
Yeah.
So this, all things driving us towards net zero. So when we say that our buildings are net, LEED Platinum certified, so that's when we meet two more people who are into this subject. We didn't know about net zero as a concept, but mm-hmm. they come and tell us that if you have this, you can also apply for net zero. And then we went deeper into it and we understand that net zero, I mean, today also a lot of people have perception around net zero is just being carbon neutral. Carbon neutral is being neutral in your carbon utilization or whatever carbon you output from your vehicular movement or any other movement. Yes. And then you can also set off by purchasing carbon credits. So this is very easy part to achieve. But becoming net zero is your energy. You have to net your energy consumption as well.
Yeah.
So whatever energy, I mean, electricity we are utilizing in the diamond production, it is any which way is coming from hydrogen, I mean, the plant, which is using coal energy or, some or the other energy is using to generate that electricity. So that's, again, not a green gas, I mean, energy that we are using for diamond consumption or production. So how can we net that? So to net the energy consumption, we have to install solar plants. So we have installed 7 megawatt of solar power plant. So our entire need for electricity to in both the factories today are set off by the solar plant that we have set. And this just started on 22nd of March. So now, after 1 month, if we see on 22nd of April, probably we would have paid electricity only in the night charges, which the night departments that are running, not the daytime. Because solar energy we cannot save yet in India. It's not, I mean, the policy is not yet out. Even though we generate excess solar energy through our solar panels, but we have to sell them back to the government during daytime. And we cannot save it and use it in the night.
What is the process like of taking carbon credits and selling those carbon credits back to the energy companies?
So I think that's also not yet structured in India perspective, but there are a few platforms who sell carbon credits. So those who have only solar plant as a business, those entire energy can, that carbon positive companies can sell their credits to carbon negative companies. There are exchange platforms like that.
There's very, very few other diamond manufacturing companies using these renewable energy sources, such as solar panels for diamond production. And of course, the challenge of the technology not being readily available in India and also other parts of the world. I think that we're still so early on when it comes to solar production and manufacturing. In addition to that, what other challenges do you see our industry needing to still overcome to achieve
I'll just touch upon the sustainability net zero part. Apart from energy, there are three other elements which we have to net, which is our water usage. So all water comes from, the fresh water comes from outside, right? We use it in the washroom, flushing. We use it for the various machineries. We use for cooking because we feed all our 5,000 people in the factory. All the lunch is by the company. So that water used, if we have to net that, then what should we do? So that is one, fresh water that we take has to be netted. Then there is other waste that all the company does, the electrical waste or paper waste. All those waste has to be netted. And last is carbon emission that we have to net. So there are, to do this four steps of netting the usage, that's when you are called net zero, because that's when you come in between of net when you do everything. So for water, we have already installed a separate water treatment plant. The factory was already old, 10 years old, so we had to change the entire piping of it. And now once the water comes in, we would be literally reusing it kind of.
Wow.
So,
and this water tank sits right by the factory, I assume.
Yes.
Okay.
So we have to install in-house. And for paper, we were struggling to find somebody like paper. We have that crushers. We use it, there are large ones as well. They make pulp out of it, and then that pulp is used to make another paper. But in our paper waste, the maximum waste was diamond packets, and those diamond packets with the plastic on it, because we layer a thin plastic layer on the paper. Yes. So we couldn't do it in-house. Otherwise, we could have used it in-house only. But there are no paper shredders which can shred the paper and plastic and then separate it. So we had to go to a vendor, and he's taking all our waste and giving us a certificate. So monthly about 900 kgs of paper waste is what we are collecting and submitting to him. And then he is making all recyclable products from that pulp that he's making. So that's paper waste. IT waste is another thing nowadays. So imagine 5,000 people. So we will have more than 3,000 computers. Now the life of it and recycling of it. So that is also a very important part to net. And then the last one is carbon. Carbon comes in, how are these 5,000 people traveling? So usually if you look at net zero, it's too technical. Scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3. Carbon emissions comes in scope 3, where, outside the factory world is involved. So for scope 3, netting of the carbon, we are asking people to do the car pulling, walking, because the factory is very much in the residential part. So you can walk. So we are encouraging all these activities for them so that we can net this element as well. Promoting the use of electric bikes, electric cars, providing them. We are also now in planning to fix proper charging stations in the factory.
Wow.
So this encourages them to use that more.
So touching on the sustainability model, in terms of balancing the economic incentives with, of course, the social responsibility, can you talk more about or provide insights of how this is the ideal business model for businesses in the future?
Hmm. So I think diamond business in future is going to be very interesting with all the, I mean, we'll be competing with the best of the world in that luxury.
Best in the world. Yes.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the likes of the best in the world, we'll be competing with them. Until now, we were not in that. Our product was competing to the best in terms of luxury, but now we will be competing as an industry, being more best practices, being IS compliant with sustainable elements. And I mean, people talk about, I mean, usually all across the world, they talk about ESG, right? Now, G is governance. Just a small example. In ESG, if G is governance, now governance is one, you have everything structured, paper, written policies. Second, if you look at Indian perspective, I mean, most of the businesses are family businesses, one generation to second and to third, right? Any which ways, whether on paper or on psychological terms or in, you know, cultural part, this is already happening. Like, we don't say
in
writing.
It's already been in place.
Yeah, it's already been in place. We just have to structure it. My father...
Technical jargon on it.
Exactly. That's what I meant to say. Like, today, whatever I spoke, right, I have not learned this in college. Or there is no paper that my father has signed and that is passed on to me that when you speak on all these terms. It is engraved into our blood and, you know, it's part of our life. So this is, we're already part of it. Now, environmental, we are already getting into it. Environmental sustainability and environmental benefits. And sustainability in general of the business also, we are, I think, prepared. Of course, the industry will get consolidated. And more technological use will happen. People are using technology today, but those who refrain or they don't want to join the early bandwagon, they would be squeezed out. That's what I feel. Because if AI is the new chapter and you think AI is not going to work and you don't get into it, tomorrow you will be pushed out of the lot. Yeah. So the new industry that we see is all with AI, social media marketing. I mean, neuroscience is something that even I'm learning new, because neuroscience has a lot to do with our social media marketing and playing around your consumer's mindset at what particular time, what particular mood, and at that time, what you're pushing to him. So all these things we never thought of while selling diamonds 10 years back or 5 years back. But in next 5-10 years, we will have to think of all these elements. And collaboration, I think, is the new thing that we will see. What, and my father has always said this, but I would repeat it here again, that do what you're best at. So if we are best at crafting diamonds, we should focus all our energy onto crafting diamonds. And those who are good at marketing must do that and take all the help from us. So those kind of collaborations are yet to happen in the industry, where a brand or a retailer is only focused on consumer side of it and then relieving all things to us, and we are relieving all things to the miners, to the best mining. If we cross function of the industry happens, then I think we are derailing from our focus and our capital and energy. Everything is deviated.
Right. I mean, it should be intuitive. Like, this should be the intuitive way to do business, right? It's,
yes,
you know, you do what you do best, I do what I do best. And we come together in this ecosystem and we're able to build much more efficiently. We're able to do business much more efficiently.
And we all should coexist.
Yes, exactly. The code,
that's the real supply chain. We can't cut one or the others.
Yeah, right. It's, you can't be, one company can't do everything. You need,
exactly,
you need everyone to be able to achieve what you're working towards, and then have the other people around you there to support it. So I think that is the model.
I mean, if I tell you, it's not a secret anymore, mm-hmm, but almost since last 10 years, we have not uploaded our inventory on RepNet. We have no problem with RepNet, but we had problem with our inventory being exposed to all those customers who are not with us, but they are customers of our customer.
Right.
We sell to many customers, for example, on 47th Street. They buy diamond from us, and then he has to sell further to somebody. But his customer is already looking at the same stone from our uploads. So it was creating a clash for our customers. So to have this healthy ecosystem is what we are discussing. we offloaded our entire inventory because they were doing best. They were sitting in New York or elsewhere in the world to do their business, right? And we were doing best in crafting diamonds. We focused there.
Right. I mean, I think that's a very mindful decision, especially as a business. It's very easy for you to go off and expand more of your customer base and take more of that market share. But instead, you know, you're wanting to, again, collaborate and partner with these people, not want them to lose out on what they do best. I want to ask you your insights on adjustments downstream with the journey of a diamond. So from where you sit when once diamonds get cut and polished in Surat and then sent to all the major hubs, and, you know, keeping in mind what's happening with the Russian sanctions and the G7 certification scheme, you know, what changes do you see happening to ensure that the traceability is indeed kept downstream once it reaches the end retail store?
So I think what is being proposed by various agencies or associations world over, whether it's World Federation of Diamond Bourses or World Diamond Council or GJPC from India, is that I have a declaration and declarative method. Otherwise, if we don't go by declarative method to determine the origin of a stone, today we do not have any technological support to you can cross-check and say, I mean, if you put a stone in a machine and say that this comes from this particular region. So we do not have any technological support today. Maybe in the future we will have 10 years down the line. But today, if we have to implement something like this, we'll have to go by declarative method. And that declarative method can then be monitored by various audits or things like that. And that is how only we can control the... It is just... I mean, if I tell you that this comes from Russia or it doesn't come from Russia, it's only data, right? Data which is flowing from one point to another. Stone is the stone. You will not be able to recognize once it's polished. So it's we just have to believe, how do we trust the flow of information and what methodology we put in. And I think we are on the right direction. We must be doing this, as we discussed earlier as well. Traceability is now in need of an hour, and we should have been doing this much earlier, not today. But any which ways, even if we are awake today, is fine. Implementing it at this large scale worldwide with thousands of entities involved in the trade and the flow of the information, it is going to take time. It's hard. Many would have never thought of any implementation of technology. Paperworks, audits would all come into picture now. So we'll have to be going through a lot of waves, tough times, but I think things will fall in place once we are used to it. So large companies will not have faced problems, but many small companies would definitely face problems in this.
It can be a big learning curve, especially when it comes to these independent brands, retailers, businesses, and especially the technology curve too, learning how to implement the technology in your
day-to-day. How to implement and then working on it. Yeah.
And then, working on it to improve it. I think there's going to be a lot of iterations on it. I don't think there's a full mine to market that exists. Of course, there's Serene, there's Tracer. But even, I think, even with that, I think there's some gaps, when it comes to tracing provenance, post that with the consumer. I think there's a lot of efforts that also need to be made. The secondary market too, with collecting these heirlooms, this information, exactly. So thinking about your vision for the future of the industry and sustainability, there's so much that you're doing now and still so much further to go. How do you see your role in the next 10 years in the industry, and maybe things you're excited about yet that you're working on at SRK?
I think next 10 years, what we are working on is more on the collaboration side, sustainable and all. I mean, we will be prepared for taking this to the next level in terms of market share is the next, I think, game that we'll be in. And more collaborations with world leading companies. And that will foster win-win situation for both the entities, for us as well as for them. So that's what I mean. I was relating to that we do best at what we are doing and they do best at what they are doing. that collaboration when happens is would be a winning situation for everybody.
I wanted to ask you if there's any final words that you want to leave with us today, maybe encouraging them to take action towards things that we were talking about before when it comes to, you know, spirituality, helping yourself, looking at the world in a different way. Any last final words or remarks?
Nothing much, but I think I would say that time is something valuable that we have, and we should all allow time to pass whatever situation we are into. Time will heal everything, and nothing stays forever. So whether it's this time or a good time, nothing stays forever. So we have to be struggling forever. We have to be satisfied forever. And there are no shortcuts in anything that we do. Always take a long-term approach. Be prepared. Do your good homework. Be prepared to take that long and longer leap. And only then you'll be long-term sustainable. Telling this from the reference of the startups of today, because people want that startup culture is where a lot of fancy things are seen in that 4 or 5 years of billionaires. But then when they go vanished, we don't track them further. So from looking from that perspective, our business is still much safer side from those startup cultures where we are still long-term sustainable. We are into multi-generational businesses. And we have space for all youngsters, because this is really the luxury thing to play around. I mean, diamonds and jewelry and then designs around it. So, I mean, there are a lot of scope in terms of how do we approach customers with the newer designs using the same product. And yeah, that is the future. And this industry is going to go nowhere. It's going to stay.
It's going to stay. It's one of those very few ones that has been around since the dawn of humanity, it feels like.
Yes.
And it is always going to be around. You know, I really appreciate your perspective on how you look at things, on the way when you look at people, you look at, and just your vision for business. Certainly taking wonderful lessons and principles from your father and passing that along to the next generation.
Thank you.
And we're indeed, with leaders like you in place, we're definitely in good hands.
I consider myself brand custodian. So with that, I'm only a custodian of this brand that my family has built, and I'm not here to own it. With ownership, we tend not to lose it. And in family businesses, we have to pass the baton to the next generation. And that is what my father always says, that this business is for generations to generations. So in order to leave the baton to someone else, I'm only a custodian in between. I have to do my best. And that is what I've imbibed from my elder generation, and I'll be passing on to the newer generation. We are already 15 people in the company, and about 8 are youngsters in the company. So they are more energetic than us, more in today's world. New generation, though they are on social media, but they are more humble towards the world, towards people. They are more sober. And they take things more seriously than what even our generations do.
Yes. I wanted to highlight too, this idea you have of a brand custodian. It's not fully yours. It's temporary. This life that we leave, the businesses that we lead, it's all temporary. It's only ours to be here for a short time, help fix it up, improve it, and then to pass on the torch to the next generation. I think that is such a centered and grounding way to go through life. Like you said, the good, the bad, it's always going to be there. And with time, you know, things always repair itself. Well, Shreyans, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Lauren.
I really enjoyed our talk today.
And same here.
Excited to talk with you again soon. I wish you all the best success and happiness with upcoming initiative with SRK. And I hope to see you at the JCK show coming up in June.
June. Perfect. Thank you very much for all this time and effort early morning that you are taking. It is always good to talk with you.
Anytime.
Thank you very much.
Anytime. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can catch more Responsible Luxury Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and the Laurenti New York Media page. If you have any questions you want answered or ideas to share, please reach out to us at concierge@Laurentii New York, and I'll link that down in the show notes below. Or you can connect with me directly on LinkedIn, Instagram, and X. Let us come together to transform the future of responsible luxury. See you next week.